Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I am your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. And as always, I am joined by...
from the beautiful Mahoning Valley in Ohio, Bob Bazanko.
Your new full-time home in the Mahoney Valley in Northeast Ohio.
It's not that much different from Texas anymore.
So, a little cooler. Maybe it's a little cooler.
It's 50 today with a breeze, so I love that. But Ohio has legal weed. That's about the only major difference now between Ohio and Texas.
Today, we're going to be doing one of our art and culture episodes. It's been a minute since Bob and I have done one together. We'll have another one coming out actually soon around Andor and the politics around Andor. But today we're going to be talking about the 1970s. And we're going to be talking about one of Bob and I's favorite topics to talk about when we're offline, which are the conspiracy movies of the 1970s. The 1970s were a period of political upheaval, corruption, surveillance, and secrecy loomed over our society. It was still, the Cold War was raging. We saw Watergate. We saw agencies like the CIA and the FBI exposed for their covert ops. We actually had an episode about a year ago with James Risen, the reporter, about Frank Church and the Church Committee that actually was one of the bodies that investigated and exposed the covert operations of those agencies. And so Hollywood, as it does, capitalized on this sort of on this moment, and we saw a lot of this sort of play out in pop culture, which is what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about actually three movies. There's many conspiracy movies out there. Maybe we'll throw out a couple of honorable mentions, but there's three conspiracy movies that we actually want to talk about today, and we'll do them in chronological order. So it's going to be The Parallax View, 3 Days of the Condor, and All the President's Men.
Yeah. A lot of times these are listed as political thrillers, which actually I like better. As a descriptor of them. But and these are important, I think, not necessarily for the how I feel about conspiracy theories, but they're important for kind of, I think, setting the mood of what was going on, because these are filmed, these are produced and shown in the aftermath of the Vietnam War and Watergate. Not the Kennedy assassination, wasn't that far beyond that.
Both Kennedy assassinations,
the King and Kennedy in 68, and the Warren Commission and the Church Committee and all that kind of stuff. And so they really, I think, do reflect this incredible distrust of the government. If you look at just, say, for when Kennedy took over, there was still that kind of vibe, right? That you would pay any price and bear any burden, and that's not what your country does for you. That's what you can do for your country and all that stuff. And now, barely a decade later, you see this increase, like bitterness and suspicion and distrust and cynicism. And I think they really, these especially, really fit in well with that. There are three of the better known of that era. There's so many that go on. It was a golden age. You would know better than me if you would call it the golden age, but it was certainly a golden age of Hollywood, and especially this particular genre.
Yeah, and the overlap here with all of those sort of those tumultuous events in American history, the assassinations and Vietnam and Watergate, is this when we see the rise of a counterculture. It's also when we see the rise of what they call the new Hollywood in film, which is this new wave era. And a lot of those sort of auteurs, as they're called, who made film that we've talked about on this show before that was really cutting edge and insightful and genius. People like Francis Ford Coppola and Alan Pakula and John Frankenheimer and Sidney Pollack. They made a lot of films like the Godfather movies and Five Easy Pieces and The Last Detail and movies like that.
Who did French Connection?
William Friedkin.
Friedkin did that.
Yeah. This is when we saw a lot of cutting edge Hollywood. And it's interesting that some of these sort of top-notch directors actually went and did these political thrillers, these conspiracy thrillers, as some also describe it.
Norman Jewison, there's a lot going on in the films of that era are always worth going back and checking them out. And it's fun to talk about it and not necessarily focus on the conspiratorial part of it, because that stuff's kind of problematic. And I think especially now with the, what is this, like the 12th life of the JFK conspiracies, it keeps coming back, right? These guys are great at getting publicity, right? And Americans are really into that. Americans are into Epstein, and you have the 911 truthers. And
you look at
if you look at social media, I mean, That's the first thing. This was a false flag, or this was that, or Trump wasn't really shot, or Trump was shot. Or so I think it's become a go-to now. People don't even try to figure out what actually happened. They're immediately conjuring up what conspiracy, the gears are in motion, and they're trying to figure out what conspiracy was involved in this. And these do that a bit, and they're a bit over the top, but I think they also really do reflect a massive political transition from just like a decade earlier.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I'm not a film historian by any means, but I keep
We're just big fans.
Yeah. I keep in my own view of this, I think Manchurian Candidate to me was always a huge turning point, which was, I think, what, 1962 or 63, right? Because that really, I think that was a difficult movie to get made. And it just seemed after that, it opened the door for different kinds of treatments of these kind of political ideas.
Isn't that period in the early 60s is where we see a shift away from that sort of initial Cold War paranoia, the led to McCarthyism and led to all sorts of bad things happening? But that's, we see the Manchurian Candidate, then we see Dr. Strangelove, even Spartacus, which is about a Greek slave rebellion, is like very leftist in nature. It was actually written by Dalton Trumbo. And so I think it's just, I think you're right. I think it's, that's the sort of lays the ground for this, like what becomes New Hollywood in the late 60s and through the 70s.
We're going to start with Parallax View.
Yeah, we're going to start, which came out in 1974. It was directed by Alan J. Pakula. He had what was called a paranoia trilogy, which included Clute, which was a thriller about a prostitute and a cop starring Donald Sutherland and Jane Fonda. The second one is The Parallax View. And then the third one is going to be the third movie we talk about, which is All the President's Men, which came out in 1976.
Parallax View stars Warren Beatty. And I'm sure we'll mention this. The three movies we're going to talk about involve some of the biggest stars of the 70s, especially Warren Beatty and Robert Redford. Dustin Hoffman was also in All the President's Men. But if you were going to put together a short list of the mega stars of that era, there's no doubt Beatty and Redford will be on it. And they also directed movies, and they also wore their politics on their sleeve, which I think is really notable because you don't see that today when you have actors who are stepping out more politically. They don't tend to be the kind of Hollywood megastars. They're all doing Marvel movies and stuff like that. So I think it's pretty cool in that regard too. These are also like successful Hollywood movies, you know, with big stars. They're not just like indie art houses. They're all over the place.
Yeah, definitely like big feature films. And also had like long shelf lives too. These are considered classics. If you look at the top 10 conspiracy movies, for example, you'll see all three of these films often listed in those lists. And All the President's Men actually often makes top 10 of all-time greatest films just across the board. Parallax View is about a company that trains people to be assassins and is found out by this investigative reporter named Joe Frady, who is played by Warren Beatty, who fakes his own death and then applies to get into the Parallax Company, which is basically a murder for hire sort of company. The movie starts off with an assassination on the Seattle Space Needle, which is not too dissimilar from the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. And it goes through there, everything from potential bombings on airplanes to witnesses to the assassination of the senator's assassination at the beginning. All the witnesses are killed either by drug overdose or suicide, or one of them gets their boat blown up or what have you. And it's an interesting sort of journey that Joe Frady makes. And in the end, he is trying to stop another assassination of another senator presidential candidate, and actually gets set up to be the scapegoat as the assassin of that senator. And that's how it ends. And it was very dark, and no happy endings there.
No. Before we go on further, I have to give you my personal story about Parallax View, because this was my brush with Hollywood back in the late 90s. A movie called Arlington Road was made, and it was filmed at Houston. And before shooting, some of it was filmed at the University of Houston campus. And before shooting, these people were walking around. I happened to be there, and my door was open, and they stopped and talked to me. And the movie's about a history professor. It's going to be played by Jeff Bridges. So to make a long story short, I actually got to spend some time with them. Went out to dinner. I read the script. They were asking me about being a history professor. I met Jeff Bridges a couple times. And I had not seen The Parallax View. So when I was talking to these guys, I said, what's the movie about? And they showed me the script. And they said, you ever see The Parallax View? I said, I don't think I have. And they said, it was a lot like that. So I watched The Parallax View, and Arlington Road is remarkably similar to the Parallax View. So that's my brush with fame. I got to meet Jeff Bridges a couple of times, had a drink with him. So that was fun. And that's true. That is not a conspiracy theory. But yeah, I think it's obviously speaks to the real life events like these assassinations in the late 60s, especially Kennedy and King. And then it goes into the underworld. And now that wasn't uncommon at the time. If you remember, like in the 60s, you had these exposés coming often from left media like Rampart's Magazine, talking about like the CIA's roles in foreign assassinations or the CIA's roles in kind of government subversion. I can't remember when the Marx and Marchetti book about the CIA came out, and then Philip Agee's book about the CIA, those all came out around that same time. So more and more Americans are realizing that these agencies, which they've been told are there to uphold freedom and democracy and all that kind of stuff, are actually also subverting Americans, they're not just subverting Cuba and Vietnam and all these other states. They're also subverting people here in the United States. That part's true. That's not a conspiracy. That actually is real. And it was, we knew it was happening. And this really plays into that. And Warren Beatty, and usually, and I think that's a fodder for conspiracies, right? It's one guy against the system, right? Warren Beatty against the system, or Robert Redford against the system, or Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman against the system, or Dustin Hoffman and Marathon Man. So it's usually one individual who's against the whole thing, right? It's one guy looking for the truth against this massive system. And Parallax View, I would assume if you're watching it in 1974, it's pretty realistic. You probably are thinking like, wow.
Yeah. And it's, I'm glad you mentioned that about how it's, you know, it's about systems and how they exert this invisible influence over people within them. The prelude of the movie is the assassination of the Senator Carroll, I think is his name, on the Space Needle. And then it's a year later, 2 years later, and it's this committee which has been investigating the assassination of Senator Carroll and determines that the person who they had set up acted alone. And
but it's like the Warren Commission, right?
Yeah, and it's supposed to be a parallel with the Warren Commission. Okay. And then when the film ends, after Joe Frady is framed as a scapegoat of assassinating this other senator, which is an assassination done with a long rifle from a long distance, a parallel to the JFK assassination, they say the same thing. But the important part here is that it's not necessarily saying, oh my God, there was the CIA was behind JFK or behind Lee Harvey Oswald to lead to the Kennedy assassination, and the CIA was behind the assassination of King and RFK. No, what it's trying to tell you is that you need to distrust these systems.
Yeah.
That there's these corporations and there's government and these agencies within the government, which are all in collusion, which are actually doing a lot to undermine us. And they're still doing that. Even though Doge may have wiped some of them away, there's still a lot of these agencies which are actually just working to undermine all the rest of us.
Yeah. It also strikes me that Warren Beatty did this, and 20 some years later, he stole a bunch of those ideas and did Bullworth, right? Mm. Similar, right? A senator who actually arranges his own assassination, right? But it's a winning formula in that regard. And it really does speak to, yeah, Americans' openness to this, right? They were willing to hear this, and the movie's really successful. It gets good reviews. And I don't know, like the mainstream Canada, it's about the Cold War and McCarthyism, but this is almost like more homegrown. And so I think it's, in that regard, more stark and more chilling, right? That this could happen. And I think it's, in retrospect, I look back on it, it's over the top, right? Guys falling off the space, you know, all these people getting killed and all that kind of stuff. Conspiracies, government agents, first of all, they don't work that way. The other part of these movies, which I always find striking, is that they're really good at what they do. Right. They kill people and they run away and they get away with it and they're able to just walk out of it.
It's the framing. The framing is always perfect.
Yeah. It's as much as I love mob movies, Sopranos or whatever. You don't shoot a guy in the middle of the street and walk away from it. Even the mob doesn't do that. Maybe in 1922 it did, but not now in the 70s.
Yeah.
So they're perfect in that regard. But I think it's really critical in regard to that idea that you should distrust these people who have authority over you. And that's the chord that strikes, right? People are looking, even something like The Exorcist, which isn't a political movie, is really popular because it's dark and it's giving you an explanation that isn't right there on the surface. People don't want to have these surface explanations anymore. And you know what I'm saying? First of all, these things don't work out that way. Secondly, the people running the government or running these agencies aren't really, they're not perfect. They're often not even very good at what they do, thankfully. And so in that regard, it's clearly an extreme view, I think, a contrived view, but also really important. And I remember when I saw it, I really liked it. And I thought, less so now, but within the context of 1974, which I think is the same year that The Conversation came out, isn't it? Coppola.
Yeah, it was Coppola's Gene Hackman. Really,
that's an amazing movie. That is stunning. That Coppola wrote it, he produced, he did everything, directed it, everything. And I think The Conversation is chilling. I actually think that's a really terrifying movie. Because when I look at The Conversation, it's very realistic. That could happen. I'm not really worried about getting shot at the Space Needle or pushed off or whatever.
Yeah, talking about this whole era of Watergate and break-ins and bugging offices and spying and things like that, which Parallax View like goes a couple of like degrees of separation out from that, because it's at the point where they're like a lot of the visuals in Parallax View are very interesting, because there's a lot of shots that are like long shots away from Beatty's character, which gives you the impression that he's under surveillance.
Yeah.
But and with The Conversation, it's a different kind of surveillance. It's Gene Hackman plays an expert wiretapper, right? And he's listening in, and I think there's murder related to it and things like that. But it actually really speaks to what people were like freaked out about in the moment, because
Hackman loses his mind in the course of doing that. He's just tearing things apart and losing it.
Yeah. But then this is the era of the plumbers, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so it's Hollywood writers and directors were really able to pick up on that. It's interesting, a little trivia note I read when I was like reading about Parallax View is that it's the Watergate hearings were going on while they were filming it. And Beatty and the crew, when they would take breaks, they would go and sit in a room and watch the Watergate hearings. Sorry.
Yeah, it's really striking how it does coincide. The timeline coincides, and yet they're on top of it. Well, I often wondered that, because I would assume Coppola wrote The Conversation before that. So he was like in many ways prescient about what was going on. Another part of this, and you'll see this in all these movies, like in Parallax View, at one point, is it a sheriff who was about to kill Joe Frady, and isn't it like at a dam or a hydroelectric plant or something like that? And Beatty turns the tables on him, and you'll see that a lot. And that's part of the genre too, where these guys are like in trouble and on the verge, but then something will intervene.
Some fluke happens.
Because in the real time, Beatty would have been killed immediately. Joe Frady would have been dead like the next day. As soon as he asked the wrong questions, he would be gone. So, yeah, totally. You know, you have to extend it because Hollywood movies have to be a certain time frame and formula. But it's a great movie. And again, I think in 1974, really important in both expressing and encouraging this distrust and this kind of sense of malaise and disorientation. But in 1975, 76, when Jimmy Carter runs for president, that's what he's working. He's banking on that, right? He's the anti kind of conspiracy candidate. I'll never lie to you. You've been cheated, and we're going to bring a new type of government, and we're going to give you a government as good as the American people are, and all that kind of stuff.
There's a whole element of healing to what he does. And he pardons draft dodgers in Canada or what have you.
Trump, January 6th, defenders, draft, all the same.
They're patriots.
Yeah.
All patriots. I think we should move into the next movie, which is 3 Days of the Condor, which came out the following year, 1975. It's based on a novel called 6 Days of the Condor. The director of this film is Cindy Pollack, stars Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway. It's a riveting spy thriller, and also packed with a lot of suspense, paranoia, unexpected twists that keep the tension high from start to finish. And Redford, who's codenamed Condor, is a CIA analyst at a front called the American Literary Historical Society in New York. And he goes out to lunch, and he comes back and finds all his co-workers have been killed. And goes on the run after that.
Yeah.
It's also
worth noting, and I did not know this until, 30 minutes ago, when I was doing some last minute, the same person wrote Parallax View and 3 Days of the Condor. What was his name? Lorenzo Semple?
Yeah, Lorenzo Semple, who also did Batman.
I did not know that.
The Adam West 1960s series.
This guy may be the greatest intellectual of the entire 20th century.
Yeah. We never even heard of him until like today.
Batman is just brilliant. It was incredible. I've never seen a Batman movie. Why would I after Adam West? It's just all downhill. But 3 Days of the Condor is funny. I know people who aren't really political, and they're certainly not like you and I political, who love this movie. It really exceeded, it went beyond that genre, and it became like, I think, like a cultural touchstone, right? We said that we'd be mentioning all our mentions. I think this comes out around the same time as The Day of the Jackal, right? So there's an appetite for these things. They're churning them out. And I say churning them out, like in a good way. Like they're coming out, but these are good quality products. It's not like making a comic movie based on a comic book every year.
Huge like, budget for special effects.
Yeah, yeah. Sidney Pollack is part of that generation. He and Pakula, were they even, what, in their early 30s when they did these? They were pretty young.
Yeah.
Coppola, all those guys, they're pretty young when they're doing these things. And Scorsese is coming out around this time, too. He does Mean Streets and then...
Taxi Driver. So I think Taxi Driver definitely taps into this sort of this zeitgeist of the moment as well.
Yeah. The 70s is really, as you get older, I started teaching and I talked a lot about the 60s and I taught a course in it. And as time went on, just on my own, my reading and my own interest, I started looking beyond that to the 1970s, which doing history by era isn't the best way to do it. But it is fascinating. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on, especially in these kind of cultural forms in that era. In this particular case, Robert Redford is this agent. He goes on the run. This also involves a conspiracy to take over like the world's, the global oil supply, really. So it's connected to oil, right? He connects the dots and they're after him now. They're after Redford. He kidnaps a woman, Faye Dunaway, makes her kind of become his escape. They escape together and they become connected. There's a love story involved in there too. There has to be. And Faye Dunaway was probably the biggest female star in Hollywood at that time, wasn't she? Arguably.
Yeah, she was probably in the top 5 or 10 for sure.
Yeah. She had done Little Big Man and all kinds of other stuff.
She later does Network. She later
does Network a year or two later. And Network's one of those. Network deserves its own show because that's just an amazing movie. But 3 Days of the Condor, and again, it spoke to in the aftermath of Vietnam and Cuba and the Church Committee, I think, especially. When I watched 3 Days of the Condor in my head, I kept thinking of the Church Committee and the kind of stuff that they came up with. And I thought that really fit that in a really powerful way. And again, it says like the CIA is trying to take over the world. They're trying to subvert these foreign governments. And they'll also do it here to you at home. Would the CIA go into an office in New York and kill 7 people? No, that didn't happen. And that's not going to happen, despite what conspiracy theorists tell you. You don't get away with that. You don't shoot 7 people in a building in New York and nobody knows about it. Hollywood. It's okay. It's not history. It's a movie, and I'm okay with that. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other part, which I found like somewhat unrealistic as well, is at the end, Robert Redford actually makes it to the New York Times to expose the plot where the CIA has murdered these people in service of trying to take over the global oil supply, which I think is somewhat unrealistic as well. But it did come out with one of the classic lines of the film where Cliff Robertson, who plays the deputy director of the CIA, says says to Robert Redford's character, "Hey, Turner, how do you know they'll print it?" He says with a slight smirk. And then Robert Redford's character, Turner, says, "They'll print it." And then Higgins fires back at him, "But how do you know?"
So it's also a comment on the media's complicity. The CIA knows that the New York Times is not going to print this.
Yeah.
They're not going to put out. Although I don't follow the Epstein shit stuff and I really don't give a shit about it. But like, I keep reading about it. Isn't all that Epstein stuff actually, that has been out there, hasn't it? I think like we do know about Epstein, right?
A lot of the stuff about Epstein's out there.
And by that time, you had the Church Committee, which did reveal that. But at the same time, I think it's a great ending because it shows the complicity of the media. And I think the next movie, obviously, we talk about is going to be the kind of counter to that, right? All the President's Men, where it's a very different ending. All the President's Men is very different than Parallax View and 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah. In some ways, Parallax View and 3 Days of the Condor are very similar.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, definitely. And like I said, I think it's important too that actors at that point, like Redford and Beatty, would do these because they had their choice. And Warren Beatty was doing Shampoo and Heaven Can Wait, those kind of movies. But he also like hardcore political. He was very active in, I think, both 1968 and 72 presidential campaigns. He campaigned with Bobby Kennedy and George McGovern both. And Redford was always very active in all kinds of, especially environmental politics and things like that.
Yeah.
And this is around not that far off from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which fits into that earlier genre, I think, of the anti-hero, paying tribute to the anti-hero. We're actually going to do a show on Butch and
anti-hero movie that Warren Beatty made, which was Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde, right?
Like in many ways, because Bonnie and Clyde and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid were such big commercial hits, allows Beatty and Redford to do these more like interesting commentary on politics and all of that.
But 3 Days of the Condor is a great, again, sows distrust and it ignore the spectacle of it all, killing 7 people in an office and all that kind of stuff. And it's also funny because in these movies with, in Parallax View, when Warren Beatty is confronted by the sheriff, who I think was named Wicker, you know, Warren Beatty turns to Ted the guy, I forget what happens, doesn't like the dam breaks and kills him or something. And then there are many places in Parallax, and I'm sorry, Three Days of the Condor, where like somebody has a drop on Redford, on Joe Turner, and Redford gets out of it, or he turns the tables and he kills the guy. And those are, I actually, even while I was watching it the first time, thought, Robert Redford is this pretty beautiful Hollywood actor, doesn't come across like a tough guy, and he's defeating everybody like single-handedly, which I think, and that's part of these too. So
I do want to throw out like other two things about 3 Days of the Condor, which is Max Van Sydow actually plays a menacing hitman who sits down with Joe Turner, actually has one of the more classic scenes of the film has a conversation about philosophy and his work as a hitman, which I think was great. Plus, I think Max Van Sydow is great anyway. And then the other thing I want to say, which is like what happened in the real world, is that according to a former Soviet intelligence officer, that the KGB was actually so convinced that there were offices like that in New York that they actually established their own in Moscow, the American Literary Historical Society. Part of what the analysis that Joe Turner does is that he reads novels looking for plots and ideas for things that the CIA can do to subvert other foreign governments.
And that's part of it too. He's not an important guy and they don't even know who he is. He can't even remember his code name when he calls on the phone. Oh, Condor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of, he's small potatoes. So it could make him the fulcrum of this, but it's Hollywood. I don't care. No, it's a great movie. I'm paralyzed. He's a great movie too.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think they were really quite important. I'm sure if I'd seen those, I don't think I saw that when it came out. I would have been a teenager if that. And so I don't know. I would have loved it. I'm sure I would have thought it was the greatest thing ever. I walked out of there thinking, oh, yeah. But and it's good. It's quite good. And a hell of a lot better than most of the stuff you've seen since then.
Yeah, it's true. And it's very different than the book as well. The book is actually a very complicated plot where they simplified it down a lot.
They cut half the time off of it. The book is 6 days of the Condor.
Exactly. It's not a full week.
Right. You know, there's a long weekend. The long weekend of the Condor doesn't work as well.
Exactly. You want to move into the last one?
Yeah, this one's the best, I would assume the best known. Did it win an Academy Award?
Yeah, I think it did.
For like best picture, best director, anything like that? Or
definitely Jason Robards.
Jason Robards won it as Ben Radley. Anyway, All the President's Men. Well-known story, best-selling book by Bob Woodward, who, that was his shining moment. Since then, he's become a courtesan to power. But Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, Washington Post writers who didn't accept the official line on Watergate, began to do some sleuthing, and the story's pretty well known. They end up getting an anonymous source known as Deep Throat, finally came out, I don't know how many years later. It was a CIA deputy director, Mark Felt. And it's the story of Watergate. And it's just, it's very different. It's a true story, very close to the book, pretty much by the book, right? Starring Robert Redford as Woodward and Dustin Hoffman as Carl Bernstein. It's unfortunate too, just as an aside, I believe Carl Bernstein was a red diaper baby, if I'm not mistaken. And Bernstein has, I think, since then, he's not nearly as famous as Woodward. Bernstein's continued, I think, to do good journalism and to be more skeptical. And he's not cozying up to Bush and Trump and withholding information so he could publish it in a book a year later or anything like that.
Yeah.
But Jason Robards is in it as Ben Bradley, who's the editor of the Washington Post, won the best supporting actor.
Jack Warden, Martin Balsam, Hal Holbrook is Deep Throat.
Hal Holbrook, yeah. Jack Warden is one of my favorite actors of all time. I just like everything he was in. There's some guys like he and Ned Beatty, I always like, whenever they're in something, I'm going to watch it just because they can take a 5-minute cameo or sub, whatever, supporting role and just blow the movie away. It's incredible. But All the President's Men, I remember seeing that when it came out. And again, I'd read the book and thought, oh, this is great. And the difference there is at the end of Parallax View, Warren Beatty's dad, at the end of 3 Days of the Condor, Redford survives, but the New York Times isn't going to publish any of that. You got to figure down the line, Redford's a goner. I figured, I remember the first time I saw it afterward, I thought, like, kill Redford the next day. They killed Joe Turner the next day. All the President's Men, the good guys won. They won.
Yeah.
I think, I say this all the time, like, that era was really a time of hope because within, 18 months, the Vietnam War ended and then Nixon was forced to resign. You know, that the U.S., you know, that these horrible, evil people were stopped. right? You ended the Vietnam War. You got rid of Nixon. There's this like real sense of hope. Okay, we've gotten through that. And now we're going to become America again or whatever. I was probably a good liberal at the time, right? And so it was cool. It ends on a really uplifting note, right? Nixon went down. Nixon was the, remember how much, you're young. I cannot describe how much people hated Richard Nixon. The vehemence, the hatred they had for this guy, which I did too, right? And you know, now what is, it's funny because talking about the larger idea of conspiracies, Nixon always dismissed Watergate. Said it wasn't that big a deal. And at one point he said it was nothing but a third-rate burglary. And people, right. That's insane. You're violating the Constitution. It's taken over. It's an imperial presidency. What we've seen since then, Iran-Contra and Clinton in China and all this other shit.
Lying about the invasion of Iraq.
Everything, right? It was a third-rate burglar. The guys who went into the Watergate hunt and Liddy, they forgot to take the tape off the door. That's what I said. The other thing about conspiracies, and that's what gets me, the Kennedy people especially. We're not going to go into that because my head will blow up. But in these conspiracy movies, quite often, it's perfect. They're perfect. They're just do everything. And that's not the real world. That ain't the way the people, the CIA is not perfect. The FBI isn't perfect. If they were perfect, we wouldn't know all the shit they do. And that's the thing. And that's the part about All the President's Men that I really like, because it is a real story. And so you see that when ultimately Ben Bradley does the right thing, but he's really hesitant and the other media won't touch it. And this also comes after the Pentagon Papers, where the media didn't do the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really timely, really interesting. The President's Men, what can you say about it? It's one of the most important stories in American history, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting how it's, Redford secured the rights to the book and is the one who helps get it produced, right? And with Pakula. And it's one, it's obvious that Robert Redford has these politics, which really wants to like pierce at power, poke at power, and where he wants to test systems and talk about systems in film, which is something you don't see at all now, right? But except in, like with an indie film or foreign film.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're getting 100% tariff on those films, so whatever. But Redford's really wanting to poke at this. And it's interesting how the story really starts, which it was just true how it happened, is they're just like local reporters covering like a strange little court appearance where these like burglars are actually all of a sudden represented by these like heavy hitters from the RNC, and they just work their way up. And it's like pretty amazing. It like, besides political theory, thriller, conspiracy thriller, it's also like just a really interesting commentary on good journalism as well.
Yeah.
Which we also like, I don't feel like I see that at the New York Times and the Washington Post anymore. I feel like I see that from like independent media sources, like Deep Drop Site News or something like that. But not, you don't.
Green and Red Podcast.
Green and Red Podcast. But you don't really see that. Or ProPublica actually is one of the better investors.
No, there's a lot of good stuff out there actually.
But like that, I think that's an important, I actually would encourage, it's too bad that the editors of the New York Times and the Washington Post don't watch that movie every year.
Yeah. We just decided to do this not that long ago. We've been talking about this for months, years probably. Yeah. But what struck me before you and I had this conversation a few days ago is when the Biden book came out last week or the week before, whatever. And you think of like Bob Woodward, who had all that information, like how Trump said, yeah, of course, COVID's real. And he didn't publish it until much later. Kept it for his book. Maggie Haberman, who had all that dirt on Trump, held it for what, over a year. And then most recently, Jake Tapper, right?
Yeah.
Who everybody knew that he was potso. And yet
Woodward did that in his last book on Biden's decline too.
Yeah. And yet they held on to it. Woodward and Bernstein didn't do that. That was being reported in the New York Times. And I think, right, every journalist should watch this. You know, what gets me is Bob Woodward is able to write books and hold on to information now because he broke Watergate. And I don't understand people like Haberman or Tapper, like, why hold on to that? If you publish it in the moment, you're still going to become famous, right? I don't get it.
It's interesting. If you've read All the President's Men, which is like way more deep into it than the film, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff where Woodward and Bernstein knew they were on to a bigger story. But they knew that once the toothpaste was out of the tube, which was, I think, a metaphor applied in something else with Watergate, is that all of a sudden the big outlets were going to get it. And then the Washington Post, which was still considered a small little local paper at the time, was going to be just washed away. And you see the New York Times or AP or whoever come in. And I think that also is like probably why they didn't sit on it. And they're not big media celebrities at the time either. But then too, I feel like that's also what made them like more earnest, real journalists than what we see with these people now.
I don't think they would have even thought about sitting on it. oh, let's not do this until after the 76 election. I'll publish it. No one even thought that way.
Yeah.
Well, the Washington Post, that kind of cemented the Washington Post. Remember, when was it? Last year, this year, I can remember when Jeff Bezos basically said, we're just going to become cheerleaders for Trump.
Economic freedom and economic freedom.
And a lot of people were saying, like, this is the newspaper that broke Watergate. And the Post lived off that. And I lived in that area for a decade. And the Post, every morning I read it. For political coverage, it was great. Like for the We Hate, the New York Times, and Washington Post. But at the same time, they do cover stuff that you're probably not going to see in most other places. And the Washington Post had great political coverage about the Senate and Congress and all that other stuff. And they were living off the spirit of Watergate for quite some time. And then, of course, it fell apart.
Yeah.
And here we are. It's a shame that you do see movies like this. But these, like I said, the important part is these were, I don't know if you call them blockbusters, but they were successful Hollywood studio movies that were like the talk along with Jaws and all that kind of thing. Probably not as big as Jaws and Star Wars, but they were big movies. I remember when the first time I went to see All the President's Men, I couldn't get in. The line was too long. And I went back and like, that was sellout.
It's interesting that we had the first half in the 70s is definitely dominated by like films that are these political thrillers. But then you have Hollywood make a move almost away from that with movies like Jaws. Jaws is considered the first summer blockbuster, right? It's what started that sort of phenomenon of summer blockbusters, which is now Marvel movies. Like first Friday of every May, you always have a Marvel movie come out now since 2000. Yeah, since 2007 or 8 or whenever the first one came out. And that's pretty much the case how all these summer blockbusters move or work. And then they like started to move us away from these more intellectual, insightful sort of films that we saw in the 1970s. And we still have plenty of those come out, but it's like definitely like we're smothered by garbage products that come out of Hollywood.
But yeah, obviously question authority. If there was like one common theme that held these together, it would be that. Like, don't trust these people. Don't trust the people in the government. Don't trust the media, right? Even like Washington, like, All the President's Men is a little different, but still, they're kicking and dragging. And it takes quite a while for them to finally break the story. It's really a message of distrust.
Yeah. I do want to say I jotted down a couple of what I would call honorable mentions in this genre that we didn't talk about. One is The Conversation. But another one, which was like a pretty big hit for the era, was Chinatown, which is also a political theory, which is like rooted in like a hidden conspiracy around everything from water rights to incest. And then
and the media.
And the media.
The LA Times. Yeah.
And the media. It's true.
Yeah.
And then the third one I wanted to walk. Throw out there, which isn't that great a movie, but I do think it's pretty, I found it pretty entertaining. That was Capricorn One, which is, it's about a conspiracy where they fake the moon landing, and it stars Orenthal James Simpson.
I was just going to say, you're just the sucker for O.J. Simpson movies.
But also James Brolin and Sam Waterston. Yeah. And it's an interesting movie to watch. It's definitely, if you're into cult movies, conspiracy movies, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah. But yeah, it was quite a time, and I don't want to become too nostalgic, but this was an era when Hollywood, I think, really was willing to, it's corny, but speak truth to power or whatever, right? They wanted to expose these things. Whereas now you have this move toward these big kind of blockbusters made based on comic books or special effects or whatever. But even Star Wars, George Lucas has been very open. He's like, yeah, based on the Viet Cong. Yeah, Americans, I think, were just open to that. And I think we will soon release an interview we did with the directors of The Encampments. And I think the fact that major distributors are afraid of that says they understand that could be very powerful, right? These movies could have an impact, but that's why they're suppressed.
And if you see The Encampments, it is quite powerful.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, we could go on and on, but I think just if you're looking for something to watch and you haven't seen these, check them out.
And if you have ideas of other things you'd like us to talk about or review for our arts and culture segment, we're always happy to entertain ideas from our audience because you're the reason we do this. And we also just like have fun. So anyway, I'm gonna close this out. If you like us, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, give us a rate and review. And then if you really like us, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit the support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And until we talk to you again, everybody have fun, make trouble, and misbehave.